podcast edition of Rod Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists on books, movies, DVDs, collectibles, pretty much anything to do with the national pastime. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Back in the day, that is when I was a kid, taking pictures was a pretty big deal. Cameras used real film, kids ask your parents, either in rolls for SLR cameras that A, cost money, and B, had to be developed, which cost more money. If you had an Instamatic camera, then you had to buy a film cassette, which then had to be developed. And if you had a Polaroid, you got your print on instantaneously, but those were basically only good for close-ups, and the film was more expensive. These days, you buy a point-and-shoot and an 8-gig memory card, and you can snap off hundreds of photos, look at them instantly, and then decide if they're worth printing or not. All right, enough history. This was a lengthy introduction to the world of baseball fan photography, which is the basis of Andy Strasberg's website, fantography.net, and the forthcoming book, Baseball Fantography, a celebration in snapshots and stories from the fans, based on his work there. This mini coffee table book, due out in April, is published by Abrams Image, an imprint of Harry N. Abrams, which puts out some very lovely art books, including several titles on baseball. Strasberg is the president of All-Star Corporate Marketing Enterprises and previously worked in marketing for the San Diego Padres. In addition to his latest project, he's one of the foremost experts and collectors of memorabilia associated with baseball's anthem. Along with Tim Wiles and Robert Thompson, Strasberg co-authored Baseball's Greatest Hits, The Story of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We recently spoke about the importance of photography to the fan experience.
So where did the idea for Fantography come from?
It came from a couple of different sources, but it all comes from my deep roots of growing up in New York. My favorite player growing up was Roger Maris, and I had this idol worship of Roger Maris, and at one point I asked Roger if I could have my picture taken with him, and this was in the mid-60s, and he granted me that opportunity, and that is one of my most cherished pictures of all time. And more than a few years back, I came across that photograph, and I thought, you know, I bet you there's a lot of other people who have got just great, great photographs of their baseball, Major League Baseball experience of going to a game that doesn't involve action. And so I started to get the word out that that's what I was looking for, and was surprised, overwhelmed, and delighted in the number of pictures that I got.
And how old were you at the time?
Well, at the time that I had the picture taken of Roger and myself, I was 16.
So that must have been a very special time.
It was. One of the things, and if people take a look at that photograph, there's a couple of things that I did, and I marvel at the thought process that went through my head. One is, as I mentioned, I knew I was going to have that picture taken because I had asked him the day before if he would agree to it, and he said yes. So the day that the picture was taken, I'm wearing a pinstripe shirt, and that's not by coincidence. And then I also rolled up the sleeves to somewhat match Roger's uniform because his sleeves were cut short. So, yes, it has a great deal of meaning to me and still does, and, you know, here it is almost 50 years later.
And you actually developed a friendship with him, didn't you?
A wonderful and incredible friendship that was, thankfully for me, carried on through his family after he passed away in 1985, yes.
So when did you create the Fantography website, which is fantography.net?
Well, yeah, thank you. The Fantography concept actually came to me in 1997. And originally the concept was, and this shows you how technology is advanced and how quickly it is advanced, originally I was going to have fans send in their pictures to a P.O. box at Grand Central Station, because that's how I kind of grew up. And then I realized people are not going to let go of those cherished photographs, and then the amount of work that I would have to do in copying them and then sending them back. So I guess it was 2 or 3 years after that that I came up with the idea of people going to one of the, what do you call it, one of these stores where they'll do everything for you, like Staples or FedEx. And what I was thought that I would do is just have people bring in their photographs, have them scan them and email them to me. I didn't think that that was too practical. And then about 5 years ago, it dawned on me that a lot of people have their own scanners and as well as digital photos and can just email that to me from their home. And I was right. That is exactly what's happening.
And how many photos have you collected over the years?
Right now I've got about 7,500 photographs that date back to 1913.
Wow.
And as current as last season, and now that as we're starting spring training, I should check the website and to see if people are sending their photographs to fantography.net. And fantography is spelled fantography.net.
And at what point did you decide you had enough material to put into book form?
Well, my hope and intention was to get enough photographs where I would be able to do a book, and that was from the very beginning. And but I probably had maybe 3,000 or 4,000 photographs before I realized I think I'm there, because not every photograph is, well, I don't want to say every photograph it doesn't have its own unique appeal, but what I was looking for is certain pictures that fit a theme as well as that would be appropriate for a book. And, you know, a lot of people take a lot of the same pictures. And I'll give you the example. A lot of people take pictures of their kids at their very first ball game. Well, the perspective of that photograph is usually taken from the parent looking down at the kid. One, you can't tell what ballpark it is. And two, while kids are adorable, it doesn't have enough uniqueness to it. So what I was looking for is a combination of personal, poignant, and unique. And not necessarily has to be a great photo as far as, you know, the positioning of the photo or out of focus or whether it's color or black and white. Those, it doesn't matter to me. But the other pieces are very, very important. And then I figured probably the formula that I use, probably 1 in every 100 pictures is going to be appropriate and right, personal and poignant.
Now, you speak about themes. The book, which is titled Baseball Fantography, A Celebration in Snapshots and Stories from the Fans, has, about 20 or so themes, a little more than that. How did you break it down?
Well, I did a number of things. I didn't know how to do this and how to arrive at a theme. And somebody who's in the book business who absolutely loved this concept, they said to me, all you have to do is the themes will appear to themselves. What you need is to just look at the photographs and see if themes start coming up. And that is exactly what happened. And certainly there were more than the 20 or so themes in the book, but I saw spring training popping up. I saw parades, mascots, camera day, transportation. I was also looking for the perspective from the fans' point of view that was unique and different. So while there are a lot of great photographers out there taking pictures of guys hitting home runs or making great catches, or striking somebody out, I did not want any of the pictures to be of game action or have been taken by professional photographers. I want the fans' point of view and seen through their camera.
Now, all these themes have are accompanied by essays, several of which you have written. How did you get some of the other people to come on board with their essays?
Well, it's all about relationships. It's people that I knew, people who had a passion for baseball, people who I thought were great writers and were interested and had the time. And I was absolutely thrilled and delighted with the essays that I received and the difference, the diverse essays in the book accompanying each one of the themes.
One of the essays comes from former Major League pitcher Dave Baldwin, who writes about the journeyman player's point of view. In that essay, he says, among other things, how flattered he and many of his contemporaries were that fans actually wanted to take their pictures. Is it my imagination, or has that attitude kind of changed over the years from the player's perspective?
I don't know if I could be the one to answer that, because obviously I'm not a player. It appears that players are probably more prone to have their picture taken with a fan than rather sign autographs. And I've heard this from a number of guys. The reason being is it's a more personal experience if you have your picture taken with a fan. Now, obviously, the conditions have to be right. It can't be during a game. And it can't be as a guy is running to catch the bus. You have to pick your right spots, just as you would if you wanted to get an autograph. And an autograph is signing a piece of paper, a ball, a bat, a picture, whatever. But having your photograph taken with a player, that to a player is much more meaningful because they are essentially documenting the fact that they those two people shared that space at that time, as opposed to looking at, say, a baseball signed by a player.
And you're talking about this from the baseball player's perspective, which is very interesting. You know, obviously it means a great deal to a fan. There's proof that they actually met this player, and here I am with him. But from a player's point of view, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that, I don't want to disregard the fact that there is still an overwhelming interest in getting autographs, but there is also a huge impact in the business of autographs, and sometimes players feel that maybe this is not going to serve the purpose of what the intention was, and that is meeting a player and having a documentation that you met that player. And maybe I'm getting a little bit too serious here, but there are some people who will get an autograph and then perhaps sell it. There's a business of buying and selling autographs. Well, if it's a picture of a player and a fan, that is probably limited in value only to that particular fan.
Another chapter you have in here is written by Ozzie Smith, the Hall of Fame shortstop, with several pictures that he's contributed.
Yeah, Ozzie and I have spent a lot of time with Ozzie over the years, and I have probably witnessed more people having their picture taken with Ozzie than any other player. And it's always interesting to watch that experience take place, and Ozzie has documented it for the book, explaining some of the things that normally happens. I mean, it'd be great. Quite frankly, it would be absolutely wonderful if a fan came up and said, "Can I have my picture taken with you?" And they said, "Sure." And well, now the fan who was by themselves has to find somebody to shoot the picture. Then the camera doesn't work. There's a variety of problems that happen on a regular basis. But it would be great if some fan just said, I've brought somebody with me, can I have my picture taken with you? They shoot the picture and they're on their way. And it takes maybe 15 seconds. But that isn't normally the case. A lot of times there's associated problems with it. And Ozzy goes into it because it's kind of fun.
Now, as you mentioned, the pictures span many decades. Do you have a particular favorite period?
Well, I do because I grew up in the 50s and the 60s. So those are, without question, my favorite photos in the book as far as an era. But there are a lot of photographs that I just think are just so absolutely amazing, whether it be Hank Greenberg walking down the streets of Cooperstown in 1939, or Josh Hamilton at spring training last year. They captured a moment in time that fans have never seen before, which I think is one of the strengths of this project, because after a while you start seeing, whether it's vintage pictures or new pictures, you do start seeing kind of like the same pictures over and over again. Well, these are so different and so unique and so varied that you're going to see pictures, obviously, that you've never seen before and possibly in situations that you never could have imagined.
I want to switch gears just a little bit and talk about the process of putting a book like this together, which is much different than putting together a regular narrative. The book's published by Abrams Image, which is an imprint of Harry N. Abrams, which is known for beautiful coffee table editions. Did you shop the idea around other publishing houses?
I shopped the idea around to book agents and had a couple of bad experiences when a book agent said, yes, I love this project, I'm going to take it on. And then a year later, they finally got back to me and said, you know, I'm not that interested in this anymore. So I lost 2 years to two different book agents before I found the best of all book agents, Jeff Silberman, literary agents, who took it, loved it, pitched it, and found a publisher, I'm not going to say instantaneously, but within probably 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, all's well that ends well, it seems, because this is quite a handsome little volume. It's not a coffee table book, but it's quite serviceable. And you, I'm assuming, wrote all the filler, all the anecdotes and little stories?
I did, which it was, quite frankly, Ron, it was overwhelming. I knew I was going to do the fillers, the sidebars, and the little anecdotes, and I loved doing that. And I also knew that I would get into the captions more so than a lot of what the fans provided, because I didn't want a picture to say Mickey Mantle at Yankee Stadium 1963. I wanted something that had as much personality and uniqueness as the photograph. So what I did is I took on the responsibility of writing caption headlines, and then once the caption headline, then I tried to give the backstory based on fans' information as it related to the photograph. And probably the best example that I can give you is the one on the cover of Roberto Clemente from 1956 or 57. Roberto is actually signing an autograph. He's near the dugout. And the fan asked him to look up so he could take his picture. And all Roberto did was just move his eyes. It is, without question, a very powerful and impactful picture. But now I had to come up with a caption that matched that picture. And first I had to come up with a caption headline. And looking at that picture, literally it took me 20 minutes. And I'm a little bit embarrassed to tell you, but it took me about 20 minutes to figure out the caption headline is signature stare, because he's signing an autograph and he's looking up. And then obviously I write the backstory of what was going on at that time and who's in the picture and where the picture was taken.
So you're right, because it'd have to be as precise as possible while giving credit to the situation.
Yeah, and the other one that probably took me the longest amount of time was Pete Gray. And the gentleman's name who shot the picture was Bill McNeish, and out of Massachusetts. And this is from 1941, and I'm looking at this picture of the one-armed outfielder, the St. Louis Browns, Pete Gray, and I'm thinking, I have got to be very smart here, and I've got to be unique, I've got to be clever, and I've got to match this photograph with the caption headline. And the idea probably took me about 30 minutes just looking at the picture and thinking, and the caption headline was, "A Black and White of Gray of the Browns."
I'm looking at that picture right now, and I don't know if it's just my perception of it, but he almost seems to be leaning in such a way that you don't know that he only has one arm. Like, it could be behind his back, almost. So
oh, wow.
If he was a one-armed player, you might think, oh, maybe he just has his hand behind his back.
That's a great observation. You know what that reminds me of? A lot of times when books are written, there's a lot of people who start putting meaning and messages to what the author meant. And I've read a number of books where authors have absolutely said, that is not what I meant, mm-hmm. but it's so great that it's open to interpretation. And I can't argue with you. I remember that picture, and I agree with you.
I know what you mean by it's almost like a pseudoscience of that, but it's extremely subjective, and as you say, open to interpretation. The viewer looks at it and sees one thing, and the photographer says it just happened to be the way the position was at the time. Didn't really think about it.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to the picture of Maris and me. That picture, somebody looked at about 5 years ago and said to me, well, there's a picture of a great ball player and a picture of a kid who probably had trouble dating in high school.
And did you?
I didn't.
All right, well, open to interpretation.
But thank you for asking.
Do you have plans for a follow-up edition?
Yes, I would. I would love to come up with additional editions, and I am hoping, as a result of this first publication, that I am absolutely overwhelmed with more pictures, so that I have opportunities to come out with future editions. And the one great thing that I have, that I make available to the fans who send me their photographs, and they do have to sign a release, they do have to sign the picture over to me, but what I can offer the fan is the possibility of becoming immortal as far as a photograph. I mean, the photographs in this book, Fantography, this is going to live forever. And I think that that is enough of an incentive to immortalize a fan, their picture, and perhaps a picture of them in future books. And so I've got my fingers crossed that I am overwhelmed with pictures of the 2012 season or the season from 1997. Or 1907. It makes no difference to me as long as, one, the photograph was not taken by a professional photographer, and two, it is not of game action. The picture has got to be personal and poignant. And, I would love to do this, quite frankly, Ron, for the rest of my life.
And just to be absolutely clear, there's no financial compensation to the contributor.
There is not. There's over 300 pictures in this book, and I am not in a position for financial reasons or trying to facilitate payment, and I have only had one person turn me down, and they had a great picture, and I will admit that. And they said, why would I give you my picture so that you can put out a book? And I said to them, well, that's certainly your right, and if you can make a book out of one picture, I would suggest you go ahead and do that. But I have been so delighted, so thrilled. People have been so incredibly generous. And since we're talking about the financial end, I will lose money on this first book because this is a labor of love, and the amount of time and money spent on producing this and publicizing it and marketing it, this is a lost leader item of what I hope will be a long tradition of books.
And how can fans get in touch with you if they want to contribute?
They go to the website. It's Fantography, FANTOGRAPHY.net, and they'll see a number of photographs that are posted on the website, and there's also an opportunity for them to click and upload and send me their pictures. They would have to agree to the consent form, which I explained, and then once I have them, I'm going to start working on book two. But right now I'm concentrating on book one and getting the word out and making people aware of my obsession with harvesting all these photographs.
Now you say getting the word out. That's becoming an increasingly part of the author's responsibility. Do you enjoy that aspect of it?
I love it because, first of all, we're talking about a subject that I don't consider to be work at all. I enjoy talking about the process. I enjoy talking about the experience. And I love talking about the photographs that I have received so far. So for me, I enjoy the whole process of promoting and publicizing the book. And I have had a number of exhibits around the country, and I show up at the exhibits, and those people then show me their photographs, and I love that too. In fact, there is an exhibit that's close to you, and that is at the Yogi Berra Museum, which actually begins March 1st and goes through the end of the World Series. And so a baseball Fantography exhibit will be on display there during the baseball season, and I've got a display in Cooperstown, and I will also have a display a year from this October at the Louisville Slugger Museum.
And that's in Louisville, Kentucky, obviously.
Yes,
sir. Do you have plans to be at the Yogi Berra Museum at some point?
We are making arrangements for me to come out at the end of April and spend some time at the Yogi Berra Museum and perhaps do a presentation on Fantography, the history of it, the marriage between baseball and photography, which is pretty interesting. Once I got into it, legend has it that baseball was, quote-unquote, invented in 1839. And when I got into the photography of baseball and then got into the history of photography, I found out that the word photography actually was coined in 1839. And so baseball and photography grew up together, but it wasn't until the early 1900s, and with the help of George Eastman and the Kodak Company, that box cameras were made available and pictures could be printed, and the general public started to embrace photography as a means of recording whatever it is that they wanted to photo document. So I may, if it's appropriate and right, I will do a little bit of an explanation of the history of baseball and photography growing up. But the main thrust of a presentation will be on Fantography.
And we've been talking with Andy Strasberg, author of Baseball Fantography, a celebration of snapshots and stories from the fans, hopefully coming to a venue near you. Andy, thank you very much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks a million, Ron. I very much appreciate it.
And that was our conversation with Andy Strasberg, author of Baseball Fantography, A Celebration in Snapshots and Stories from the Fans. For more information, visit fantography.net. Remember to visit Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf Facebook page and click like to enter the monthly random drawing. The current Facebook friend book is Kurt Smith's A Talk in the Park, 9 decades of baseball tales from the broadcast booth. Join us next time when we give a tip of our hats to St. Patrick's Day with our guest Charlie Rosen, author of the new book, The Emerald Diamond, How the Irish Transformed America's Greatest Pastime. Visit the blog regularly for the latest baseball book news. Questions, comments? Send an email to ron@ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com. So long, everybody.